Yep.
Everything goes wrong.
Yes. And I must tell you that all the cards fell out of my hands. I had to salvage them. So I know that they're very, well shuffled, right? As I'm shuffling, for some reason, they just, you know, what cards do sometimes.
So you picked up the ones that landed face up?
No. I reshuffled the whole deck because they all fell out of my hands. So that was really something.
Card draw this morning.
Yes. Okay, card one.
What's the title of this chapter, by the way?
Excuse me?
What, David?
What's the title of this chapter? It's not Malkud.
It's cross, moon, star, shapes in the sand. Everything goes wrong.
Oh, okay.
And it's specifically about, what's the transition to the apocalyptic parts? Or apocalyptic.
Yeah. Say that 10 times.
Easter cornflake, whatever.
As in the pops that are advertised.
Yeah, your apocalypse pops, yes.
Apocalypse pops, yeah. All right, so what's number one?
Okay, number one is Prince of Swords. Number two is Worry, which is the Five of Discs. So you got Prince of Swords, Five of Discs.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have here the number three, the Universe. And I believe it's in the same.
That was in number three last week.
Yes, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, I've got the notes right in front of me. Mm-hmm.
And number four is Nine of Wands Strength. Number five is Knight of Discs, which is the King.
Right.
Number six is Nine of Discs, which is also called Gain.
Lots of discs, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess.
Arc of Influence. 10, which is the trump of the Wheel of Fortune.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, I didn't know that. It says fortune on it, which is, it's really, we know it as a wheel.
Number eight
is Queen of Discs. Mm-hmm. And number nine is Ten of Wands, Oppression. Now, number six, you have number six as Gain? Nine of Discs, you got that. Okay, good. Because I'm writing them down now, because when I... Okay.
Yeah. That's interesting, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So we have no cups, and we have mostly discs. We got one sword and one wand. We have more than one sword?
No,
just one
sword.
We got
one sword and one wand.
And two trumps.
And two trumps. The wheel.
Oh, we've got two wands. We have the Nine of Wands in position four.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. So that's interesting.
It's kind of all over the place, really.
Well, of course, the missing element of cups is for me the most standout thing.
Yep.
And I mean, there's not even any. Neither of the majors are water cards either, so we have no water at all. We're dying of thirst here, folks.
This just looks like my horoscope. My natal horoscope has no water in it whatsoever.
Really?
Yeah.
Hey, you know what, Paul? You will ride a canoe on the streets, not on water. You were foreshadowing this reading. No water.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. I know what the canoe was about. Maybe that's what the tarot secretly is. It's a canoe, you know, by which we symbolically navigate through the world, you know.
Hmm. I don't know, though. I would consider it more of a submarine because it carries me into depths that I'm not so sure I want to go sometimes.
Yeah.
But a craft of some type or other, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, let's see. Well, that's fascinating. So, I think when I drew up this thing, I didn't bother to put in the battling Prometheus. But we have, so what we did basically have is we've got two stories with each other. We have the Prometheus story, and then we have with this Sophia and battling.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Stacey doesn't want to give up her power, which makes sense. I mean, you know.
I knew she wouldn't.
Yeah.
Little slut.
She and that Bragunov guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we have this forgotten episode in Prometheus' own past, which
mm-hmm.
is the battle of
Israel and Ishmael here almost.
Yeah, of, of, you know, and actually, believe it or not, I was looking up, the capture of Antioch took place in May of 1098, and this was also where there was the discovery of the Holy Lance. I don't know if any of the symbols comes in later, but this was where the Holy Lance in Constantinople comes up. So that's the famous lance of a monk, you know. Visions of Saint Andrew told him that the Holy Lance was inside the city, and the starving crusaders are prone to visions and hallucinations. Raymond believed Peter, and so that's one of the things about the famous lance of something rather.
Oh, Longines, the lance of Longinus.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's how you pronounce it.
Yeah, well, at least this is one version of it. Yeah, Peter went into the pit, reached down, produced the spear point. Raymond took this as a divine sign that it would survive and thus prepared for the final fight rather than surrender. Peter then reported another vision in which St. Angelo instructed the crusader army to fast for 5 days, although they were already starving, after which they would be victorious.
A little overkill there.
Well, I'm saying that kind of makes sense, you know. Increased the morale of the crusaders, and Peter was reported in the Bohemian Wanted. Unfortunately, the way this is written, none of it's too clear exactly what happened. But you can look it up at Wikipedia, Battle of Antioch, the Siege of Antioch. The other thing that Antioch is known about, this is a symbolic thing, is that there were two styles in ancient Christianity, this is medieval Christianity, of biblical interpretation. There was the Alexandrian and the Antiochian ways of reading the Bible. The Antiochian way of reading the Bible was literal. There was, and scientific in the sense that they were into a kind of scientific, philological way of reading the Bible. And the Alexandrian way of reading the Bible was symbolic and analogical. And later, anagogic, if you know. I don't know. I'm just that actually is an interesting important. That's relatively important to know that there were these two because they still rival today biblical interpretation. That you have people who will read the Bible symbolically, which is the Alexandrian tradition, which is also more philosophical, whereas the Antiochian tradition is sort of reductionistic, scientistic. A lot of the way the Bibles are read and studied have a strong Antiochian flavor, and with very little, with a slight sprinkling of the Alexandrian. Though the Alexandrian is much more imaginative and fun, so I give up my bias there.
Yeah, well, I agree with your bias, so there we are. bias is my bias.
So I guess the next thing to do is to figure out really quick who wants to play what and the characters. So you're going to be, who's going to be Stacia? Barbara's been retired, I don't think she...
So, you want me to do Stacia?
She's going ba-ba, cuckoo.
I think you'd look good with purple hair, Johan.
I had purple hair at one time, dear.
There you go.
You see?
Yeah.
Oh, if you only knew me in my youth.
So the funny thing is, I didn't start doing my hair weird colors until I got old, you know.
Well, everyone comes into their own good time.
Yeah, right? I guess so.
Yeah. The
you want to be the narrator, Paul, right?
I'll be the narrator, and I'll do the signs. The signs as they come up. There's a few signs in here too. You want to be Agent Ball? I guess I can reprise my role as Jack Faust, getting tossed into the who's gown, right?
Yep. I'll be Grace. I'll do Grace. She doesn't have a big part, but I can do her. And I'll do Grace.
Okay. And then we have who wants to be the? We got two Prometheas here. Promethea of the sun, of the yellow Promethea and the blue Promethea.
Come on, Val and Joy. Step up. Yoo-hoo!
Woo-hoo!
Oh, Trish.
You'll be Trish?
Yeah, I'll do Trish.
I'll do the yellow Promethea, too, because Grace really doesn't have that big a part. So if you want me to do that, I can do that.
Okay. And then we
the Arabian
the
Promethea.
The blue Promethea. Again, it's not a very big part for people.
I can do whatever you need me to do.
Okay, the blue Promethea it is. That means you're the Muslim.
I think the blue is the Christian. Yeah, the yellow is the Muslim.
Oh, the yellow is the Muslim, okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, yeah, that's right. I can see it here now, finally. Okay. Promethea.
Who's the student?
That's just a small role. What you want to pop in there and do that? Why don't you do that, David?
All right, if I can find out who she is or he is.
Yeah, I think it's God fostered child made a living tale that imaginative might put on. Like pearls or armors, so the story went. They spoke it in Arabia, where a girl was moved to pen her own song of Promethea, and doing so became the heroine. They told it in Constantinople, and inspired a maid to verse so that she was alike transformed and made to manifest fable. In her Eastern eastern wastes after time, Promethea heard of the prophet's teachings, and renouncing pagan idols was made convert. In her northern city, likewise did Promethea set aside all magic art, and so did enter into Christ. And neither one knew of the other. Wind drew serpent trails between the dunes, and this way many, many years passed. Cross star moon, shapes in the sand, everything goes wrong.
No.
Who's that in bed?
Who's that in bed?
I think it's
me.
Oh.
That's me?
Who's Sophie?
Who's Sophie?
No, you're Stacy.
Yeah, I'm Sophie.
Okay.
Done.
Beat me like an egg by Saturday, la-da-da-da. Hey, Mom, God, I slept great last night. It's so good being back home with you and everything.
Baby, I hardly slept. I was thinking about everything you told me, everything we talked about.
Here you go, Val. I dare you to pronounce the name of the cereal.
No. Come on, Nick, you're a Chalk Boys pop. I still can't get over it, you being Promethea. That stuff, you know, about your dad, we got to talk more about that.
Yeah, we do. There's a lot of things we have to do together. Look, I better get to college.
I know, sweetheart. This Promethea thing, it's great, but it ain't a future. You don't want it screwing up your grades.
Haha, Mom, I'm kind of knocked out that you care so much. I'll be back later and we'll talk.
I love you, baby.
And, Mom, this is sort of secret, okay? Only you and Stacy know about it. Listen, I'll see you later. I love you, too.
It's a secret, screaming it out.
Yeah, right.
I'm standing on the sidewalk. Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, waving goodbye, walking down the street. Do-de-do-de-do-de-do.
There's something in the background with the ape here.
So the back of the head there is Sophie. Stace, come on. Sophie.
You're not going to read the weeping gorilla?
She's looking out the window. There's a weeping gorilla.
What hurt me most, though, was the pain. There.
Oh.
I always wanted to be the weeping gorilla.
Okay.
Okay. You're welcome.
Hey, Sophie.
Okay.
Hey. Oh, man, it's so good to see you. Wait till I tell you all the cool places I've been. It was fantastic. I met my dad, my real dad's face. He was gorgeous. And there was this scary bit where I saw Grace in you. You were... Stacia? Hey, come on, what's up? Did I do something? Stace, come on, please. This is scaring me.
Oh, nobody arranged a welcome home party for Sophie, and it's scaring her. Whereas me and Grace handling that demon cocktail of a mayor, that was just R&R, huh?
Look, I'm back, okay? I can take over as Promethea again.
You think? What's being Promethea's something you just hand out or take away? So, Sophie, this Kabbalah, did you meet God? Give him any good advice?
Stacia, why are you being like this? Was it tough being partnered with Grace?
Jesus, Sophie, you are so naive. That friggin' Grace, we love each other. And we're staying together, which means I'm staying as Promethea. End of story. See you around.
Hey, don't you just walk off. Stacia, don't you fucking dare.
You got about 1 second to get your fucking hands off me, bitch.
Or what, huh? Stacia, you're like some little kid. You've got no idea. I've been appointed Promethea by the highest power there is. And what, you think just because you've got your dykey little crush on Grace, all that changes? You think...
Slap!
Can't fight. Oh, I'm sorry.
What happened? I didn't see. Vanderveer, she just hit the other girl. Ah, they're just a couple of lesbies. They probably... Whoa.
On the floor.
Oh, jeez. Faith, come on. This is all messed up. You don't have to do this.
F you.
This is stupid. She is close by above, beneath afar. We mustn't do this. This is wrong.
Yeah, well... You're too late. It's done.
Fire from the sky she brings, pro. But this is bad. This has never happened before. Has it?
Thus the centuries were passed in war of rat and snake, and in the dreams of glass-green beetles coppered by the desert light. In old Baghdad, Promethea split the clouds with Allah's fire, so that the rains were come, a hard and rattling mercy. And in proud Constantinople did Promethea, in imitation of the Savior, drive out the moneylenders and false traders from the temple courtyards. At last, tiring of the world, Promethea dwelled with the saints and the glories among the paradise gardens of the right and only God. Likewise, Promethea quit eventually this mortal realm of the palaces of heaven for the one true Lord there to abide. And they knew nothing of each other. Both are differing Elysiums that did not conceive of a dominion save their own. And so the spirit of Promethea was divided in herself and did not know it. And the years were like grains pouring in the presence hourglass, throat down into the spent, still past, out of the crumbling and uncertain future.
And they, here they are, the two of them, in all their glory.
Yep. I don't think we've been introduced, have we, darling? What have you come as, exactly? It's still me, but I'm different now. I'm reclaiming my earthly duties. Why are you doing this, Grace? This wasn't our agreement. Things change, darling, for all of us. I've grown rather attached to physical existence. And to Stacia, as I believe she mentioned. Grace, the goddess has appointed me Promethea of this era. Compared with that, you and Stacia aren't important. I outrank you now.
Me? You outrank me? I am effing Grace Branna, darling, and I'm the best there's ever been. I've had enough of this. Defend yourself.
Grace, we can work this out. Don't.
And then, in the 11th century...
Wait. We've missed the whole page here.
Go back, Paul. We have an UGG.
Oh, I see. Right.
I did the UGG.
She did the UGG, and then we've got people down below.
Oh, Jesus.
Out, everybody. Get out.
Little bitch. Little schoolgirl thinks she's better than me. Grace. I said don't. What? Grace. Stacia, look, I didn't want to do that, but don't you see? Either we stop this now and work things out, or it's war between us.
Ugh. Fair enough. Then it's war.
Ah!
And then, in the 11th century, came the Crusades. And from her sweet Islamic paradise, Promethea saw the conflict descending into earth, and did wage jihad against the infidel. And off the mist her dunes, Promethea heard tell of another like her, and yet that fought with the crusaders did not believe it not. And when news of the war was heard in heaven, so Promethea came down and was vengeful fire and amongst the heathens. While on the desert winds came stories to Promethea of one like she, who sided with the Saracens, these tales dismissed as fancies. Thus, in the year 1097, they were met at Antioch.
Meanwhile, back in Malkuth, we should be doing some things here.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
The battle continues.
Yeah.
Okay, Jack Faust.
Uh-oh.
There's the agent.
We're doing the agents. Luce.
Luce, it's her, the one with the colored hair. And a new one. Jesus, come on. We have to get over there right now.
Different giant heroines, both claiming to be Promethea. More than 24 people have been injured, and property damage could run to millions.
Sophie?
Oh, we don't have these Prometheas in here.
Dear God, they're fighting.
They're fighting, yeah.
Yeah, dear God, they're fighting.
Oh, Margaret, honey, I'm getting real deja vu here.
Mistress Bill speaks truly. This happened before.
Wait, Paul.
Their war was terrible, yet not so fierce as the alarm that fluttered sudden in their souls, the dread that toiled down in their hearts. Yet they fought on, told themselves the tears that swelled up unaccountably in both their eyes were caused by dust in the desert wind, by smoke. And everything, each of them, the spirit child Promethea divided itself and began to weep and grow afraid. And still they battled on and knew each other not. Screaming, cursing each by different gods, they fought each certain day alone were sheep, Promethea, the very principle of mankind's spiritual imaginings. Like dogs, they raged, they sorrowed, like dogs. And the planes hit the buildings. And the smart bomb hit the mosque. And the tanks roll over a demolished settlement. The pretty student and the shopping precincts gets exactly halfway through the last defiant prayer. So broadsword claimed against plummet spear and scimitar rang and blood cross shield, and everything proceeded as it must. And at last locked their death grip, two religions looked into each other's eyes and recognized themselves. Knew then that both were halves of what had been one holy undivided source, thus drowning in their blood with realization mirrored in stunned eyes. They tried to kiss, but died before they did, and the Promethea spirit reunited with herself, held in her scream of horror, wiped the schism from her mind, and forgot it quite, until a great while later.
Big explosion of some sort, yeah.
Powerful,
very powerful, yes.
Memory is, can cause some damage, okay.
Yes, okay. David?
Jesus Christ, what the fuck was that?
Lucille, I'm hurt, my arm.
It's okay, Karen, I got you. Hey, you, what happened?
I don't know, people were fighting, but, oh, shit, my ears are a bit bleeding.
Okay, just stay back, we're FBI agents, and holy Christ, Karen, it's them colored hair and the new one. Lucille, I'm going to pass out. No, Karen, you stay with me, damn it. They're out cold. We can take them.
No,
Lucille, look.
Something's happened.
What do you... Oh, God.
and the manifestation of the former Prometheus. All right.
Margaret, sweetheart, we shouldn't open a doorway like this. Only demons do this stuff.
Bill, this is an emergency. We gotta limit the damage that's already been done. All right, Anna, we've got them. You can seal up the aperture.
Karen, it's all of them. Subject 1901 to 1920, subject 1941 to 1970. Karen! Now, what the hell was that about?
Next week, a higher court.
This should be interesting, the next one. The tarot cards, yeah.
It is an interesting one.
Why am I suddenly thinking of the Witches' Council and Bewitched?
It's pretty similar. Except, unfortunately, Solomon is a little senile. But that's, I guess, neither here nor there. This is actually kind of a, lots of action, and it's a relatively short.
Yeah.
Chapter. Yeah, it's only 24 pages for a comic. That's usually about 32.
It's exactly where we are in the world today, though. I'll tell you, it's amazing.
Yep.
Yeah, and someday, actually, I think someday, it does make sense to blend the esotericism of Islam, of which there is a rich tradition, with the Kabbalah. Christian and Jewish Kabbalah, because they actually are very simpatico, particularly.
Well, they come supposedly from the same source, Allah, God, Jehovah, all the same God.
But they can also be fashionably manipulated in the same ways. Now,
yep.
I would be careful how you do that, but it's there's a particularly in Hebrew and in Arabic, they have a consonantal anagrammatic way of understanding the alphabet, which they only use the consonants and the vowels are reserved. And so you can get the same roots in Hebrew. You can find the same roots in Arabic, and extend the definitions and the associations of what they mean in that way. So that's which is actually a fascinating study. I might write an essay on it sometime in my endless jottlings of writing essays.
Well, we clean house. Paul writes essays. What can I tell you, right?
Yeah.
Whereas my house becomes ultimately will become a big dust bunny and will blow away.
Oh, mine too, so don't worry about it.
I think that panel before the explosion was a seminal panel where Prometheus' spirits reunite with herself. I think that's the telling part of the chapter. The uniting of the Christian and the Islam spirit.
Do they all come to get her back into both of them, Grace Branagh, just to integrate them again?
It's the coming together of unity, I think, in this chapter, and we don't know exactly where it's going. There's going to be an explosion of energy that we have no idea what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's an explosion, and then the two FBI agents are freaked out. And they see Stacia and Sophie as Promethea, both laying unconscious. And the other Prometheas come from the other side, what's the name of that place again? Imaginaria?
Mm-hmm. Immateria.
Immateria.
Oh, the Imaginaria.
Whatever, your name. Yeah. What's in the name?
Immateria, and reach out and take them to heal them, and also they are reclaiming lost memories, which were the two Prometheas that had fought each other back at the Battle of Antioch.
Hmm. Okay.
It reminded me of the whole building of the building of the mosque in Twin Centers.
Yeah.
You know, New York City. The whole thing. It's, people are not coming together at that this point, but if they do come together, it'll be a shift in consciousness.
Yep.
Well, I mean, the one thing is that they really made a big brouhaha about a nothing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, it was news. I mean, you know, supposedly. It was manufactured news, kind of.
It was all manufactured news, manufactured, even manufactured distress. Because most people didn't go. Well, it wouldn't matter. I mean, you know, 2 blocks away is 2 blocks away. That's a lot of real estate in New York.
Yep.
You know?
But most people wouldn't matter about anything about Prometheus either. I mean, this is an allegory.
Yeah.
You know? And I do think that what's going on in the world right now is Christian and Islam, and there's going to be a battle that's coming together. And either they're going to unite together or we're going to go into war.
There is the Judaic root. And we're talking about the battle of the three rings here. Three rings being Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. There's actually a wonderful fairy story called The King of the Three Rings, which is a story about the three different religions, how they don't get along, and how they become united eventually. I forget exactly how the story goes.
Yeah.
But I think it's called The Three Rings. Look it up someplace.
Mm.
So let's go back to the, let's look at a reading and see how the reading corresponds something to the story we read and also the pictures.
Well,
got any comment on the pictures?
Mm-hmm. Well, the first one is the Prince of Swords, who's definitely doing battle. I mean, that's definitely a battle card, if anything.
Uh-huh. And it's also in the fire.
Yes, the physical active action.
So it starts out, you're starting out with, this is it, giddy up, we're going, this is, we're in full, you know. I guess that's where people believe their words, they're vehement about their what they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then, of course, then the attitude, which is the next card, which is water.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to Prince of Swords. I think the beginning picture depicts the swords. It's a split between Christianity and Islam, and the thing is, it's not manifested at this point. It's just there. It's just like it's a potential, and that's the Prince of Swords to start the whole storyline.
Mm-hmm. So, in other words, it's not split. You see the Prince of Swords as being both the unity of. End of things rather than we've got the fights already here and let's get it on.
Well, if you look at the image of the card, it looks like he's ready to slice people in half or
for right now
either or free them. I don't know whether he's freeing them or slicing them.
But that's potential being split. I mean, and that's what's going to happen. And I think in the middle picture is that picture of the tower. And I think that talks about that energy. The tower energy hits, and everything falls apart.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third page over is the tower. And then the fourth page over is where the lightning hits the tower.
Yeah.
And the split comes.
If you look at the image of the Prince of Swords, you have these two circles, and then you have the prince sort of astride on a single circle.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
So it does show in some ways the split, and it also shows and the sword sort of raised up as if it were going to be ready to strike or something.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. But see, the third page over is the tower, and that's where Stacy and Sophie are beginning to have their battle.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that the tower is complete and whole, and then once the fourth page over, the tower is hit by lightning and the whole thing begins to fall apart.
I'm not I don't know where you are, David. What are you looking at?
He's looking at the pictures. Can you name the numbers of the pictures you're looking at?
Well, no, it's starting
from the first page.
Starting from the the first page is the picture of the prince. You said the storyline, and there was the mother and Stacy, Sophie, and she sends her off to college. And Stacy goes to college, and she's in the hallway, and she meets Stacy.
Mm-hmm.
And so that point is the tower. The middle of the page is the tower.
Oh, the tower. Yes. Okay.
And then she'll turn over the next page. The tower is being hit.
Being struck. Okay, I see it. Yes.
The tower being struck, people are falling apart. That's Stacy and Sophia, and the whole split takes place there.
Okay.
And that's where this prince, the sword in the very beginning, has been split asunder. Christianity and Islam are split. They're no longer united.
Of course,
turns over that tarot card, is that the tower too? You know, I wondered about that. What is that card that he's turning over? I can't see it. It looks a little muddled.
Let's see.
I can't tell what it is.
Where was that? That was with Jack Faust?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I have a magnifying glass. Believe it or not, I keep a magnifying glass around, so.
Oh, I do.
Wow, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I do, too. So.
Okay. Wait. I see something. It's red.
Yeah, it is red. I'm looking through the cards. Oh, wait. It is the tower.
Yeah.
It is the tower.
Yes, it's the lightning struck tower.
Uh-huh.
And he's going, uh-oh. So he's basically experiencing the reality going on through the cards.
Yep.
Well, you see there was a screen there, too, which he could be actually watching the action going on.
Yeah, I think he is. That's weird.
Poor Faust.
Uh-oh. I love it.
Look at that television. It's a television set. It's a screen there.
Yeah, well, it's being broadcast on TV, no doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah, people falling. I mean, it's a person falling out of the sky.
Yeah. So, in our own reading, we have as the third card, the universe.
Mm-hmm. Again.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
It comes up a lot.
Uh-huh.
And it's interesting here because we have this conflict, and yet the way the reading shows up is it shows up as a, how would you call it? Shows up as in its unitive form, even though there is this, and it kind of shows in a way though everything is falling apart with this, Stacy. The way the elemental reading seems to be going is it seems to be talking more of an essential healing going on. Yeah, it's sort of like surgery, right? You know. Which is where, you know, you cut, you harm to heal.
Yeah.
And there's sort of like, so it's sort of like, you know, Stacy, being who she is going to hang on to wanting to be Promethea. And there is this this stuff going on this way. And,
you know, that's interesting, Paul. If you go, if you use that as a unitive idea and a healing process in the third position, then the fourth position is a Nine of Wands, which is called Strength in the Tho deck. But in another deck, it would be the man standing in front of the wands that are in the ground, and he's holding one. He's in front of it. He's bandaged and he's all beaten up.
Yeah.
But he's strong and he's learned from his
quietly work. Hanging on. Yeah. Yeah.
And he's going to step forth into the future with some power. And I think that's the Knight of Discs. He's very grounded at that point.
Yeah. That's an interesting. It's a very subtle reading. We get some. You got to admit that the readings that we've gotten so far for all of our Promethea chapters have all been astonishing.
Yeah. Oh,
astounding.
Yeah. I agree.
You know, in terms of the insight that they offer, some of the. And then, of course, the future outcome is gain, which, again, in my fastidious way of wanting to read the thing I want to look at in the future, as in the future. But in that case, looking from last week, the arc of the future outcome was the Five of Swords defeat.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was the Seven Chariot, the Seven of Swords, futility, and the Sun. As these were that was the arc of influence from the week from last week.
Yeah, it was.
So you can see how that fits into what we read. You know that the journey that they're taking is defeat. They're fighting one another. You know, so it's a futile fight, right?
Mm-hmm.
From my point of view, the Chariot represents the process they have to go through. And one of the things that process going through is leads to the Seven of Swords, which in this case means they're not getting anywhere easily. But it comes to a bright outcome. Then going back to our reading from this week, we start with the Prince of Swords.
Which, incidentally, looks like he is driving a chariot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All the princes look like they're driving chariots. Yeah. And that's, you know... And so what we have, we have the conflict shown again, but on a different level. But we also have, whereas the outcome in the future was the Sun, and here we show that it's the universe shows that there's that even though there's this profound breakup, the universe card seems to show that there's also a profound healing going on at a deeper level.
It's interesting, too. If you take the... who is that author? Does the Celtic cross that Paul...
Paul Barrows.
Paul Barrows.
Yeah, he says if you pair the first card and the last card together, like the Prince of Swords and the
right.
Ten of Wands, the Prince of Swords in the beginning of the chapter is in unity, and the last card, impressions. So once the unity is split, there's going to be that oppression, that energy of oppression. And then
right.
comes the Three of Discs, and the Queen of Discs is a pair.
Right.
And that seems fit to me, too. She's the threshold of birth, but there's a little bit of worry going on about what's going to happen here. And, you know, I think that if...
Well, that's also presaging the whole
right.
in theme for this story arc. We're in this. If it's a three-act play, we're at the beginning of the third act.
That's right. And but if also take card three and card seven together, those are the two major cards: the universe and the wheel of fortune. And those fit to me in my mind very well. There's the universal energy of healing and the
that's the heart of Tarot right there.
Right.
And that's actually. I'm glad you pointed that out. Because you know what the Wheel of Fortune is sort of what I call the exterior, the mechanical tarot, and the universe is the interior or the universal tarot. So, and in terms of their at the two levels of integration, you know, one being seeing the world in a dualistic form, which is the Wheel of Fortune, and seeing the world in a unitive form, which would be the universe card here.
Yeah, if you pair the Nine of Wands with the Nine of Discs, which is strength and gain, you get a very positive energy. And the middle card then it becomes the King of Discs or the Knight of Discs, and that in my mind is extremely positive. That's all about gratitude. I think this spread is very evocative of the change that comes with unity.
The thing about the hidden motivation that came to me with it being the Knight of Discs, which is actually the King, the hidden motivation here is who will master the body that is Promethea.
Mm.
Right.
Yes.
Actually, that's a really good point. Yeah. And actually, I think a lot of it's set up to be the whole issue here with the predominance of disks is saying that all of this stuff is earthbound. This is taking place on the Earth, for the Earth. And it's in that way, so this as the beginning of the third act, which is what I... or the end of the second act. Actually, this is sort of the beginning of the third act, because the whole theme of the last book, which we're going to be coming to after next week, deals with the apocalypse, deals with the end of the world as we know it, and part of the end of the world, of course, is not just an end of the world. In a way which is actually a transvaluation of the world.
Right.
Now this is definitely pointing to that, and also what the keys are to that. You know, and David, I really agree with you about the unit of stuff, and also Val. Yeah. So, Joy, you got anything you see in this?
Did you say it again?
Joy, I was just trying to bring Joy into the conversation. Still around, Joy? Maybe she is. Okay.
I have to go get I need a cup of coffee. I'll be back in a minute.
All right. So some of us need a cup of coffee after that.
Right. Some, maybe a smoke.
One of the things we missed out last time, it doesn't necessarily, and we do have a little extra time this time, is we really didn't exploit some of the fascinating information from last week's story. I mean, we got this week's story that's got some fascinating information in it, too. But, what we have in it is the, from last week that we didn't deal with, from the previous posters, we have, let me get up here. You know, we went through, remember the bubbles and stuff like that we went through?
Mm-hmm.
And some of the characters, a lot of this stuff was dealt with at great length. So, for instance, Prometheus just passes death. Steve and Barbara are right behind her. This is where they jump off of Keter and go back down. Whenever you're beginning, so somebody raises a question, and I'm on page 343 and 344. One technical quibble. Whenever he begins to flight down, and then the splash page shows paths from Tipperith going out into space rather than connecting to Chokmah Binah. And then it says the paths are actually correct. It's just seeing here in three dimensions and not as a diagram. And there's also a tilt for the vertical-like effect. So you look at the first spread that it appears on the whole in the tilt page, it becomes more apparent. As the pages move forward, the characters get closer and closer to their Malkuth destination, making it seem like the pathways are going off into space, which in fact they are, but out of the correct spheres. And then it goes on. Dath on this version of the Tree of Life is indeed partly a chronozone. And partly black hole. This black hole idea of an imploded sphere or planet or imploded plane of consciousness or whatever you choose to describe is indeed Doth. To me, the abyss is the edge of Doth. And from the diagram, I have the Tree of Life Doth, and therefore the abyss fall along the central path that runs from the middle. And then Barbara and Steve are transformed into white doves just as they pass through Yesod, where Lucian and John Kendrick Bangs and Baron Munchausen wave to Prometheus as she passes by. So Promethea doesn't turn into a dove. It took 11 issues for the serpent to climb the Malkuth to the Keter, but the doves fly black down in only 8 pages.
Yeah. Well, you know, gravity and all. No.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's always from here on in, it's a downhill run.
Yeah.
And then according to strong resemblance of a this has a strong resemblance of a short story by Aleister Crowley called Wake World, which can be found in his book, Nox Om Pax. That I have not looked up to tell you anything about. And there's also a movie called Eisner. That's similar to that. So then, some of the other things that take place farther up in that chapter I had to do with identifying the usual suspects and also showing a more exact pattern to the bubbles and what that meant. So we saw, we got a sense of his poetry, but they had a more elaborate form of reference to it. So I just thought I'd mention that in passing, maybe to stimulate you from looking back a chapter or so for some stuff we overlooked from last week, and then we can go back to some of the star and the moon. So and then there's a another thing that was written here. This is on page, we're now back in the current chapter that we're doing today. And I'm on page 349 under the title. The first part refers to Christianism and Islam. Shapes in the sand reminds me of an anecdote told by the Greek philosopher Aristippus. He was shipwrecked and landed in a solitary island, but he found figures in the sand and concluded that there were men. The story must be in Diogenes, The Life of the Philosophers. The only reference to shape in the sand that I could find in the net was Aristotle's Histories of Animals, where small mention is regards to Pythagoras' shapes in the sand also remind him as lines in the sand, which comes from two protagonists, one daring the other to cross a line made with a stick in the sand before the confrontation proper begins. And Randy Newman's song, Lines in the Sand, which was written about the Gulf War, Everything's Wrong, obviously refers to what happens in this issue.
It's interesting. I thought also in one of the Gospels that Christ, when Jesus draws in the sand with a stick, does he draw the shape?
He does.
That's right. Yeah, with his finger he draws. He draws the shape.
Yeah,
he draws,
when the devil was trying to tempt him in the wilderness.
Yeah, that's it's in John, and there's I read a whole book on I didn't read the whole book, but I scanned the whole book. A whole book was written on that pericope. And specifically the point was that was often used to prove that Jesus was literate. Because, you know, there's no sign he ever wrote anything or could even read. And, you know, in most cases when people recited scripture to each other, they had memorized the scripture.
It was an oral tradition, yeah.
Yeah. So his writing in the sand was often emphasized that this made Jesus was literate, even though they don't say what he wrote in the sand. You know, he didn't necessarily write letters.
He could have been drawing pretty pictures.
Yeah, he could have been drawing a picture, you know.
Yeah.
You know, some foxy lady or something, and saying, "You see, now why would you want to throw stones at that?"
Exactly. You know.
In the sand, he was saying, either you come with me or you don't.
Yeah.
Well, if I remember right now, Chris, I might have conflated this, but I think that pericope has to do with the woman, the harlot being judged, and that's when he wrote in the sand.
Maybe it is.
The writing in the sand might be an argument for him being educated, in that Hebrew was often taught by writing it, drawing it in wet sand. So it wouldn't be a case of he wrote in the sand, or he was just playing around and goofing off and maybe drawing pictures in the sand. It might be that is a communication form he was used to using because he was educated.
Yeah, that's the way it was argued that for that. That was the way it was done. Also, that Pericope was considered somewhat independent in John. In other words, it was in some versions of the early manuscripts, and in others it wasn't. So it's an interesting part of John that's not fully cemented to the others. But I do, if I remember right now, and I could be wrong about this, I think the writing in the sand was provoked by the judgment of the harlot where they were going to stone her.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And that again also brings the issue of authority and his acting as a rabbi and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you're right. I looked it up on the internet. It says, just what did Jesus Christ write in the sand? It says, the Pharisees brought the adulterers to him on the temple steps.
Right.
Maybe they probe his knowledge of the law of Moses with the hope of to entrap and accuse him of some wrong before his follower. Perhaps even question how far the forgiveness he spoke of went. Surely they were seeking to tarnish the image that the masters had of him. Instead of answering quickly, Jesus knelt down and just wrote in the sand. Just what did he write in the sand? And he goes on. Okay?
Right.
The crowd of people most likely surrounded Jesus, pressing and trying to witness another confrontation between him and the Pharisees. Standing before Jesus in the middle of the crowd, the woman probably stared down at the dusty feet, wishing she could vanish from the face of the earth. I imagine that when Jesus finally stood up after listening to all the taunts and questions, and after he pronounced, "He that is without sin among you, let him first cast a stone at her," that the woman fell to her knees in desperation. Again, he literally crouched before the temple and continued his writing in the sand. While Christ wrote, stones fell from the dirty hands, and people slowly departed. Eventually, Jesus was left alone with the adulteress on the temple steps. What did he write in the sand? Perhaps no one saw the writing in the sand. Perhaps only the woman could see the writing. Or perhaps Christ only doodled. Personally, I think everyone caught a glimpse of what he wrote, and it shocked everyone so much that they combined with his judgment were all shamed with the light of what the sand writing exposed, their own guilt. Anyway, you know, it's just all speculation.
Yeah, that's interesting. Even if something as simple as this pericope from the New Testament, you can see in this case relates allegorically to the whole idea of Islam. Now, you know, I mean, Christians felt that Islam is a betrayal of their own truth, right? In other words, they're fully ensconced in their truth. And Islam comes along and claims to be correcting not only Christianity, but Judaism. And in some ways, the success of Islam is proof to a degree, if nothing else, to the degree of the accidents of history, that something was wrong with Christianity, that Christianity got something wrong, that Islam was correcting them about.
Needless but Islam to say, was around long before Christianity, was it not?
What, Islam?
Yeah.
No.
Islam came afterwards, wasn't it?
It was 700 years after the founding of Christianity.
But you know what, I always thought that it was in a way. You see, a society, the tribal society, needs very stringent rules.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's, and in the Middle East, those rules were part of survival. Christianity all of a sudden loosened up those rules. And some people, the society couldn't survive.
Well, actually, what I think, my view is that when Judaism combined itself with paganism,
mm-hmm.
They were confronted with to them a conundrum that they could not figure out because of the substantialness of their thinking. And how can the all-powerful one God incarnate into a puny little human being who has such a partiality and is so ultimately powerless? How can that possibly happen? It just did not seem, it was inconceivable that this happened. And so they tortured themselves over this, and they came up with the idea of the Trinity. The idea of the Trinity evolves in wedding the Christian story, which is basically that of the failed Savior who in his failure actually is victorious.
Mm-hmm.
The story is pretty common. There's another version of it, Sabbat de Sev, in the 1600s, which is the famous Jewish Messiah. But in this case, Jesus was going to be the Savior, basically toss out the Romans, and at least that's the way most people thought of the Savior, was going to toss out the Romans and restore the independence of Israel, or at least Judea. And of course, what happened is that Christ came in there and gave his message, was condemned and crucified as a common criminal, as a heretic by the Romans, and this was a terrible embarrassment. And so then the people left over had to reevaluate that. And this is a common thing, when prophecy fails. It's a wonderful book written called When Prophecy Fails, which deals with a modern cult that predicted the end of the world and how the people who were in the cult reevaluated how they basically said, well, that the world did end. Nobody noticed, but we noticed because and everything's changed. By the way, and there are various versions of the world ending that way, but I don't want to get digressive. So what happened is in this story, you have the eventual development of how the apparent failure was actually a victory, and the probable historicity of Jesus is that most people, if it would have been just a myth, would have not had him crucified.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have started with a crucified Savior,
right?
Even though the crucified Savior is a well-known and established mythical motif that goes back thousands of years before Jesus. And Fraser is still the best one, though most people don't agree with Fraser's reconstructions anymore. In the Golden Bough. But the thing here is that then in the 300 years it takes place for Christianity to become Christendom, which is when Christianity rules the world, and they basically took over Roman law, and they took over paganism to a degree, Platonism to a degree, and they had to meld this Judaic thinking with this pagan thinking. And they came up with the Trinity, and then they fought like tooth and nails over the Trinity, which was to explain this otherwise inconceivable idea of God incarnating, particularly the all-powerful, complete unknown God, the super God, beyond Zeus and all the other gods. And So they came up with the Trinity, and then what comes along is 400 years later, Muhammad and dealing with the idolatry and the sort of rank paganism, which was all tied up with special privileges of the clans and Mecca, he comes along and says, no, he says, there's not three gods, that make one God. There's only the God, there is no God but God, which is the simple unity of the divine, you know. And of course, the second argument is, that he offers, that's the, and that's the first thing you have to believe if you're a Muslim. The second thing is, and Muhammad is the prophet of God, which, you know, most people, most Christians are not going to accept. The second, they might believe that there is no God but God. And then, so, you know, so then, of course, Muhammad tells these stories about the Christians as they were being told, or as he knew them, in Mecca and Medina, which is where he lived. And he also tells, retells Jewish tales, again, as he heard them. Or, you know, and they become part of the Quran, you know, so there are Quranic versions. And one of the things he's very clear about in the Quran is that Jesus is always stated as Jesus, the son of Mary. And Mary was considered a prophet. And they actually believe that Jesus, they believe that Jesus was crucified, but was taken by God off the cross before he died or truly suffered. And so the thing that was on the cross that was suffering was the Silver Makan. It wasn't really, the Spirit of God was not suffering. Which was a famous Nestorian version of Christianity. And the Nestorians were the ones that were living in Arabia. They were, you know, a non-majority version of the Christian society, group. The other thing that they also believed very strongly was Jesus was going to come again. In other words, that the end of the world was going to be with the second coming of Jesus. So in other words, they accepted a lot of Christian tenets as understood. The one that they rejected totally and completely was the Trinity. And it's only been in the last 100 to 200 years that modern logic has actually developed enough, particularly a modal logic, that we actually can understand why it isn't necessary to have the Trinity anymore. Modernism develops with Locke and Hobbes. Hobbes and Locke were both skeptical, empirical philosophers, British philosophers, still quite readable if you take the time to read them. And one of the things that Locke demonstrates in his skepticism about religion was that the Trinity, from the point of view of the developing modern science and modern thought, was a unbelievable idea. It made no sense whatsoever. So that was one of the reasons why Unitarian thinking was very strongly partial to congregational thinking in the United States at that time. Because if you were following modernist philosophy, empirical philosophy, the metaphysical philosophy of Platonism made absolutely no sense whatsoever, and the Trinitarian views make absolutely no sense. So I'm sorry for that long disquisition there. But in some ways, I think that my own personal bias, being not overwhelmingly wed to Christianity or Judaism or Islam, for that matter, is that Muslims got it right. In other words, they were offering a valid critique to Christianity. But the critique was actually institutional, because what the Christianity at that point was utterly part of the status quo that was part of the oppressive class. You know, so that in our society, wealth and privilege and power are completely secularized, except that you have some people who get wealth, privilege, and power through religion. In the Middle Ages, the access, the rationale for wealth, privilege, and power was that you were religiously in charge. You had it by divine grace. This is the divine right of kings that developed in a variety of ways. You know, which was maintaining the establishment, but it also meant that you were oppressing the majority of people in the world. So they didn't have access to health, wealth, or anything else for that matter.
which I think we may be headed for again.
Well, we are headed for it again. I mean, what's fascinating is that these, when they drew up the initial laws of in Judaism, they put in the Jubilee year. They also have, there's something else they have in there too, which is when every 50 years, certain personal debts had to be forgiven. And including, and there was also a thing where slavery could not go beyond a certain number of generations. I think one generation, and then or two generations maximum. I think it was a limited. And you could not have slaves in perpetuity. And they had a whole variety, because people often, you know, found themselves debt slaves.
Mm-hmm.
And in society, it was one of the things that happened. But what happened is that if you had a jubilee there, all of those debts had to be forgiven, and everybody was allowed to be on a relatively equal playing field again, at least in terms of debt. Ultimately, we're going to have to do the same thing in our society. It's just inevitable what's going to happen. I mean, it may not necessarily be a bloody revolution, but we're going to have to do some serious revaluations. Because they have everything owned by a smaller percentage of people, with most everybody else having less and less access to things, is not going to work out. Okay, well, that's enough of my blather. From my point of view, the fighting of these two Prometheus, I think it's kind of interesting that they put it here, because in the Battle of Antioch, mainly because one of the things that the Battle of Antioch did is it destroyed the Antiochian tradition in Christendom, which was that. You know, the Alexandrian tradition lasted and did eventually influence Quranic interpretation. But to a lesser extent, the Antiochian tradition did not come into Quranic interpretation.
And with that...
anybody else got anything they want to say or bring up about this chapter? I'm sorry I went off on my
Well, I mean, it's very, very, the background information is very interesting, that's for sure. I find it interesting in the sense that most people don't know this.
That's right.
And it solves a lot of questions. No, it does. It answers, not solves. It answers some questions about, what's going on. I just have, you know what my major issues are with the Islamic religion? And this is what how they treat women. You might as well be...
Yeah.
Well, what you're getting is, you're not getting a true Islam.
Right.
Islam is in a various series of a sort of brittle decay, and what you're getting is you're getting you're getting its fundamentalist version. And the fundamentalist versions are it's sort of like that crazy guy who was going to burn the Quran.
Yeah.
They had a long interview with him on BBC in which he talked for a great length.
Oh, goody. I can't.
And, well, actually, it was interesting because it showed you that basically he was a know-nothing Baptist.
Yeah.
Right.
And his view was that only Christians can get into heaven and everybody else is damned and going to hell, which is, a flagrantly medieval view of the Bible and of Christianity.
Yeah.
But if you're gonna be overly simplistic, you can look at it that way. Definitely the tradition at various times looked at it that way, and rather seeing that all religions point to the same God in their own way, and that each needs to be respected in its own terms, as long as you you know, respect. You know, you don't, in other words, you don't, it's sort of like, and this is actually the way they treat women, it's almost the same thing. Men basically are assuming in a sort of blatant, decrepit form of patriarchy, are claiming that women can have no motives that are not controlled by men. Right? I mean, this is what it really comes down to. It's not just dress; it's everything. Women have no inner life of any consequence.
They have no soul.
Yeah, well, there's a huge argument about women not having any soul. Mm. There's a huge book on this subject about Thomas Aquinas and on whether women have souls or not. It was a much debated, and they basically claimed that women had lesser souls than men. And of course, that was because from the point of view of the mainline tradition, not the esoteric tradition. And I argue for an esoteric thread in history that's not recognized in our main things. The mainline view of why women had lesser souls is they were not capable of reasoning. And that reasoning was the fire that led to the transformation of truth and beauty and justice and goodness. Everything. And that was the argument of why women had less souls. And to some degree, these brittle fundamentalist Muslims may have a similar view. I'm not actually
convinced
they would use the same arguments. But the basic thing is that they are claiming that women can't talk for themselves, that they don't have a view. And, you know, it's sort of like if we're going to get along with each other in a good relationship, I can speak for my own feelings, but I can't speak for yours. I can't really know yours unless you tell me them to whatever degree you're going to, right? To realize that you have this independence, autonomy, separate point of view, which has its own reasons and validity and is not automatically negated because of your gender.
Right.
Or relegated to some lower status because of your gender.
Right.
I think the same type of thing goes, the same thing goes on, is that women, men are incredibly intimidated by, men are intimidated by the thought of women having their own points, their own autonomy. It just scares the hell out of them.
Isn't that amazing? I think it's amazing.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I always ask this of a group when I do some teaching, when we get into these issues, I always ask, tell me, if you could sacrifice or you weren't allowed to have one of your parents alive, which one would you choose? Which one would you give up?
Wow. You mean as you're growing up kind of thing?
Yeah.
Or, or at any time, right?
At any time, yeah.
To knock one off.
Or just, which one would you say, okay, they're expendable?
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting to see the results. Most of them would say, I'll keep my mother.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting because I was just thinking I would have chosen my father. But anyway, I mean, I don't know. It would be very hard because, and it hasn't anything to do, in my thinking, with gender, you know, with the male-female thing. It's just knowing what each of them gave to me.
Well, how many women are there in this world bringing up children without either husbands?
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Without male figures.
Right.
I come from a family in which even though the men were around, they were good time Charlies. They really weren't. They gambled. They weren't really that
They weren't participative.
Right, exactly.
They were not central to the family life.
Exactly. They procreated, and that was basically it. And they gave a lot of problems to the women in their lives.
Yeah.
My grandmother was a survivor, and that was it. She survived with 6 kids.
Wow.
And till this very day, we don't know how.
Wow.
We have our suspicions.
My father was essentially out of the same mold. I mean, he may have contributed somewhat financially to the household, but for the part, he was utterly, he was not at all interested in family life or his kids. Just utterly uninterested, had no interest whatsoever. You know, so I essentially grew up without a father.
So you can imagine yourself growing up without a father. Can you imagine yourself growing up without a mother?
I cannot imagine myself growing up without my mother. I mean, and, you know, that's what, even though my mother has had her own issues because of being an orphan, you know, I'm still in the, my still basic emotional state is with her, is, okay, so, you know, you're the wounded child that's never been healed from your own suffering. But you did the best you could,
mm-hmm.
what you had. You know,
there's a great quote.
And I'm still protecting her, you know.
Yes.
To the end of her life, I'm always going to protect her. Basically, I love her, and I'm not going to not love her just because she had a limited capacity to love, just because she wasn't loved herself. I'm not. That doesn't mean that I'm going to be claiming she didn't love me. Love me better than my brother or sister, which is what I get in my family this day and age.
There, I use this quote when I wrote about the Empress card. Judicious mothers will always keep in mind that they are the first book read and the last put aside in every child's library.
Wow.
Yes, that's true.
C. Lennox Remick. Rimmond.
Yeah. So there's my little hands beating on those breasts again.
Yep. Yep. Exactly.
Yep.
I think that's a very powerful quote because that's it.
Yeah.
You are shaped more by your mother.
My grandson's mother would realize that, but unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's a quote you can use to her. You know, you never know.
Well, she knows it. She knows it. I mean, she knows it in her own way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just trying to emphasize with her at this point that she needs to get the message across to my brother and sister, the ones who feel that she's been giving special. You know, they feel alienated from her. I mean, for obvious reasons, she has a limited capacity, but that's not the point.
Yeah.
The point is that she's, I said, look, Mom, you love all your kids the same.
But actually, that's not true. As a mother, that's not true. You may love them all equally well, but not the same.
No, well, yes, yes.
Does that make sense? Yeah.
Yes, that makes sense. But I still emphasize it with my mother that she loves them all alike.
Yeah.
That if my... When my brother and sister complain that they're not loved enough, then I say, well, Mom, you've got to tell them that you do love them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Wow. Speaking of my grandson, I would appreciate lots of positive energy mm-hmm. being sent our way this week. Tomorrow is the hearing to determine if my son, who is my grandson's uncle, gets to retain custody of him, or if he has to go back with his mother.
And you're hoping
that he can
that
stay where he is.
Yeah.
Because he has thrived so well there.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, his mother is party girl central, who tends to want to, you know, not show up to pick him up when she's supposed to, and that sort of thing. So.
That is, has the caseworkers evaluated her?
The recommendation is that the custody stay for at least 6 more months.
Mm-hmm.
But
the judge, you know, he will rule officially tomorrow. And, you know, it's not over until he makes his ruling. So we'll see.
Well, I think the 6 more months thing is that, you know, she hasn't really proved herself to the social workers.
Exactly. Over the past 2 years. What is she going to accomplish in 6 months? But, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
She loves him. I know she loves him in her own way. She just isn't equipped to be a full-time parent, period.
Mm-hmm.
And believe me, there are people who are not. So.
Well, yeah, sure. I know, there's a whole bunch of people I know, including myself, the best thing I did for my non-existent kids was make sure that they remain non-existent.
So
they may not be happy about that, but
everybody will just indulge me here for 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I have to rant about one thing. My son is my grandson's uncle. His father, my third son, is deceased. My son, who has custody of Harper, is gay and lives with another man. They've been partners for almost 10 years now, so, I mean, it's a long-term thing.
Mm-hmm.
The mother voluntarily turned over custody of Harper to my son and his partner 2 years ago, and now she's trying to play the I don't approve of their lifestyle card.
Oh, she's born again now?
No. Absolutely not.
She's just using it as grist for the mill.
Yes, exactly.
To try to get her way.
I don't think you can play that card with any kind of
I think she's trying to extort money. I think she's trying to extort money.
That's often done on advice of attorneys because of the antagonistic views of...
Yeah.
I mean, what we really need to do is we have to rethink our justice system.
Mm-hmm.
And well,
the kind of justice system that we have, which is based on creatively creating a pro and a con, doesn't necessarily serve justice. And
that's right.
This is well known now, psychologically.
No shades of gray there, yeah.
But it's not part of our legal system.
Yeah.
And you know, it'll be generations before we get around to. Hitting some of those, changing some of these ways of doing things.
On the other hand, here's Harper going to his first day of preschool this year, which he was in preschool last year, too. Now, my son and his partner had both met the teacher already, so the teacher was fully aware, you know, of the situation. Anyway,
right.
So Harper walks in and he's introducing him. This is my Rob, my uncle, and this is my Mike. They sleep in the same bed. It's like, okay then. Thank you, you know.
Right.
Thank you for sharing that, Harper.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's letting them know that these guys are special to each other.
That's right. Yeah. And then I have to tell you guys this story. It is so cute. One of the little kids in Harper's class last year came home. The mother related this to my son. Came home one day and was eating lunch, and all of a sudden he just burst into tears. And the mother is like, "What is wrong with you?" And he goes, "Harper's daddy is dead." And the mother is saying, "But your daddy is here. Your daddy is here. You know, you don't have to worry about that." And the little boy goes, "But now Harper has two daddies, and I only have one."
That's so cute.
I want two daddies. You know?
They're precious.
I don't see you luck out. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the mother's like, "Well, what am I? Chopped liver, you know?"
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess that
actually,
kid made his choice.
If he's about 6 years old, that's about the time that little boys are thinking they need to, separate from mama.
Yeah. Well, actually, he was four at the time. He's almost
four,
five. Yeah, he'll be five in a couple weeks. But but I just see this poor little kid telling his mother, "But I want two daddies like Harper," you know.
Yes, it's that cross-sex identity formation.
I love kids. You know, they're just so, they just say right what's on their mind.
Yep.
You know, it's like, geez.
Yeah, unfortunately, now that Art Glinkett letter's gone, we have to find somebody else who can interview kids to get them to stay.
Yes.
Well, several years ago, I mean a long time ago, maybe 30 years ago, Dick Van Dyke actually put out a book of funny things that kids say.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Art Linkletter kind of had a stranglehold on that market for a while. But
Yeah, but he has finally passed on to the great beyond.
Yeah.
Boy, that guy lived a long time.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah.
And speaking of that, Tony Curtis is going on just heartbroken.
Yeah.
So, Eva, you know about Eva Gabor?
No.
Zsa Gabor?
Yeah.
Her husband's going to have her plasticized. She wants to be plasticized and placed in a diorama of her one of her movies.
Okay, then. That's a little too Madame Tussauds for me, you know, but okay, yeah.
Yeah, that's sort of like Trigger being, Roy Rogers' Trigger being stuffed to put in his, his display case.
Yes.
And Dale Roberts was going to have to die before her.
Yeah, obviously. Oh, my word. Which one was that, Eva or Zsa Zsa?
Zsa Zsa.
Okay, I figured.
Yeah. I can think of a few.
I don't think she's dead yet. That's what they're planning to do.
Of course, my comment was that I thought she was already plasticized, but that's okay. You know,
several times.
So what's interesting about what's coming up in terms of the story arc that we're reaching as we move into the last chapter of book four here. And then start the first chapter of book five the week after next, is we have this judgment that takes place. And what's interesting about this judgment is that's taking place in Materia is fascinating. And it brings up a lot of themes that are going to be carried through for the rest of the series arc as things conclude in the final book. Specifically the issue of the end of the world, the issue of the moral authority of the end of the world, in fact, the whole issue of authority, and specifically justice and its relationship. And also, justice is being related here as Solomon, who is senile, in other words, forgetful.
Oh, good.
And you have to think about the, you know, just the forgetful justice, you know, justice that doesn't...
It's blind, but now it's also forgetful, huh?
Yeah, right. Yeah. it's an interesting thing. But also some of our own rules of evidence, you know, which are forced versions of forgetfulness or overlooking. At least that's the way they're sometimes portrayed. That's an interesting point. So, I guess on that point, we might as well wrap it up for this week. Anything they want to say?
Yeah, I saw on your website, Paul, not your website, your Facebook thing about HBO, about the Game of Thrones.
Uh-huh.
It's going to be on HBO, the Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
On that's HBO.
Good. Yeah, yeah.
And that's going to be wonderful. I've been reading the series. I'm up to the fourth book now.
Oh, yeah, it is. It's a wonderful series. And you know, he's got the other books have been ready to go for years, and for some reason they've withheld them. I think what happened is that because of the way he's decided to deal with this narrative and in terms of its thickness and complexity, that he just basically wrote himself into a hole, and I don't think he has any way of getting out.
I think he's got six books in the series so far.
Yeah, but he could write 12 more.
He could.
The way he set it up in terms of the complexity of the stories and the many threads that he had, the narrative things that he could do it. I mean, so that the series could go on forever. It's still only going to serialize the first volume.
You're totally involved with the characters, I'll tell you.
Yeah, Johanna, you probably know about the Game of Thrones, don't you?
Let me see. That sounds familiar.
It's the writer who did R.R. Martin, who was behind Beauty and the Beast.
Okay.
You know that TV series.
Yes.
And he's got the Sword and Sorcery epic, which is written in a narrative style which is sort of thickly Icelandic. It's set in another world, you know, and it has minor supernatural elements in it that take place.
Game of Thrones?
Yes, the Game of
Thrones.
Heavy-duty narrative reading, but it's quite fascinating.
And HBO's doing a series on it.
starting.
2011.
Yeah, Game of Thrones is coming to HBO.
I think there's about four or five of the volumes have been out, and then two others have been due to come out for the last 3 years, and they've just basically been put on hold. Why they're on hold, I don't know. I think what happened is that his last narrative threads got so complex that in one book he could only deal with half of them, and the other book he could only deal with the other half. And I think that where that left him was so out things that I think he may be holding back because he wants to, reposition how he's going to deal with the characters so they become less diffused. It's really complex. It's developing into a very complex alternate world with multi-generational influences.
Kind of like Middle Earth.
Yes. Oh, please.
Yeah.
That's right up my niece's alley. All that stuff. No.
Yeah. They're very graphic.
I had enough problems with Russian novel. Novel with all the nicknames. The abbreviated name.
This is definitely the same. I think the guy that I like the most is the dwarf.
Yeah, I do too, Tyron. I think he's great.
Tyron. Yeah, Tyron. Yeah, to me is one of the. Is one of the.
He's a great character. And Jamie, I like that.
Yeah.
Okay, people. I think it's time.
Right. Great week. All I'll see you next Monday or Wednesday.
All righty. Take care.
You take care.
Bye.
Be well. Bye-bye.
Bye.